Part 3 17 Maracy had read a lot about life in the roughs in her youth and knew what to expect of a stagecoach trip. Boredom, dust, and discomfort. It was wonderful. She had to forcibly keep herself from hanging out the window, as Wayne occasionally did, watching the scenery pass. They weren't in the roughs, but this was close enough. The smell of the horses, the bumps in the road, the rickety creak of the wood and the springs. She had seen and done some remarkable things during her time with Waxillium, but this really felt as if she were living in an adventure. Waxillium reclined across from her, feet up on the seat next to her, a wide-brimmed hat over his eyes, face bristly from a day without shaving. He'd removed his boots, which sat on the floor beside his shotgun. It seemed surreal to remember she'd even considered a relationship with him, now that so long had passed with them working together. No, she was not interested, no longer. But she did admire the perfect image of him there, the gun, the boots, and the hat. Of course, that image was distorted by the sight of Steris curled up on the seat beside him, snoring softly with her head on his shoulder. In what kind of bizarre world did Maracy's punctilious half-sister end up on the adventure? Steris belonged in a sitting room with a cup of tea and a dry book about horticulture, not riding cross-country in a stagecoach toward a potential army of allomancers. Yet here she was, snuggled up against Dawnshot himself. Maracy shook her head. She wasn't envious of Steris, which was, frankly, remarkable, considering their upbringings. It was very hard to hate Steris. You could be bored by her, confused by her, or frustrated with her, but hate her? Impossible. Maracy got out her notebook to continue her report to Vendel and Constable General Reddy, which she hoped to be able to send before reaching Dulsing. Waxillium shifted, then tipped his hat back, eyeing her. "You should get some sleep."
"I'll rest when we stop."
"Stop?" Maracy hesitated. They'd been going for half a day already, avoiding the main roads to evade potential pursuers from New Saren. They'd crossed several fields and spent a full hour rattling along a stone ridge to bypass some farms below in a way that left little sign of their passage. Their path lay almost directly northeast of New Saren, skirting the mountains to their right, staying to the foothills, which meant some ups and downs. But this was still good farmland. All of the basin was, even here at the edges, where things were drier than in the center.
"I thought that after stopping last night," Maracy said. "Dear, you mean to go straight there?"
"Straight is an odd term," Waxillium said, "considering how much Milan has us weaving to avoid getting caught, but yes, shouldn't be more than another 4 hours or so." A train could have had them there in a fraction of that time, delivered in comfort. Maybe the outer cities did have reason to gripe about the way things were set up.
"Waxillium," Maracy said as he shifted again.
"Hmm?"
"Do you think they're real? The bands of mourning?"
He tipped back his hat all the way. "Did I ever tell you why I went to the roughs?"
"As a youth," Maracy said. "It was because you hated the politics, the expectations. Polite society that was anything but polite."
"That's why I left Ellendale," Waxillium said. "But why the roughs? I could have gone to one of the outer cities, could have found a plantation somewhere to read books and live a quiet life."
"Well,"
Maracy frowned,
"I guess I thought you always wanted to be a lawman."
Waxillium smiled. "I wish I'd spotted it that easily. Should have. I spent my childhood tattling on other children for every little thing they did."
"Then what?"
He settled back, closing his eyes. "I was chasing a legend, Maracy. Tales of the survivor's gold. Riches to be had. Stories to be made."
"You?"
Maracy started.
"You were a gentleman adventurer?"
Waxillium winced visibly at the term. "You make me sound like that fool in the broadsheets. I tell you, Maracy, those first months were hard. Every other town was full of the unemployed from the mines shutting down.
and I couldn't enter a saloon without finding some fool babyface like myself up from the basin with a head full of glory and treasure.
So you started hunting bounties, she said. You told me this part. Something about boots.
Eventually, yes, Waxillium said, smiling. Struggled for a long time up there before turning to bounties. At first, though, I had my eyes full of riches and gold. Took time to shake that out of me, but even then, becoming a lawman was about the cash. Started hunting men for money. And, well, there'd always been this streak in me that didn't like seeing people get pushed around. Ended up in Weathering. Just another forgotten, dried-out city in the roughs with nobody to care about it. It was 6 years before someone gave me credentials and made it official.
The stagecoach cabin swayed on its straps. Up above, Marisi could hear Wayne and Milan chatting, so long as they weren't making out again while trying to drive.
When Vendel told us about this, I didn't want the bands to be real, Waxillium said, looking out the window. I hated the thought of some foolish dream pulling me away again, after I'd finally found stability in Ellendale. I didn't want that lure of excitement, the reminder of a world I'd come to love out there in the dust.
So you think they are real?
Here's the thing, he said, leaning forward, causing Steris to shift in her sleep. My uncle hasn't had time to breed his allomancers, as I suspect he's been doing. The plans he and the set have concocted, they're long-term investments. But he promised something to Kelesina, and he really sounded like he thinks he can deliver. You have the device?
Marisi pulled the small metal cube from her purse. Waxillium fished in his pocket and brought out his coin, the one some beggar had apparently given him. He held up the two next to each other, sunlight through the window gleaming off the cube and highlighting the otherworldly symbols on its sides.
Something strange is going on, Marisi, Waxillium said. Something important enough to draw my uncle's attention. I don't have the answers. I need to find them.
She found herself smiling at the intensity in his eyes. It's not the treasure hunter that made you decide to go to Dulsing. It's the detective. He smiled.
You were listening to what Milan said to me last night?
Marisi nodded.
You were supposed to be asleep, Waxillium said.
He flipped the coin, caught it, tossed the cube back to her.
Going to Aradel would have been the mature, prudent move, but I have to find the answers. And who knows? Maybe the bands are real. If so, then getting them away from Suit is at least as important as informing the governor of what happened in Nusairin.
You think your uncle is trying to make allomancers with technology rather than by birth?
A frightening power in the hands of a man like my uncle, Waxillium said, leaning back into his seat. Get some sleep. We're probably going to infiltrate this building project in Dulsing during the night.
He settled with his hat over his eyes again. Marisi felt she should do as he said, and so tried to doze off. Unfortunately, there were too many thoughts in her head for sleep. After some time, she gave up and returned to her letter. In it, she explained what they'd done and discovered. She'd needed to send this soon. Perhaps she could find a telegraph station when they changed horses and send the letter in time for it to make a difference. Once done with the letter, she moved to her notes about the missing Chondra spike. Kelesina, acting on behalf of the set, had tried to kill Relure and had assumed success. When Suit had demanded proof, she'd ordered the spike dug up and sent to him in Dulsing. But where would it be kept there? Someplace secure, presumably. How in the world was she going to find it? She held up the little cube. Suit had asked after this. Could she use that somehow? Marisi frowned, turning the cube. The sides had little grooves between them. She looked closer and in the sunlight spotted something she hadn't seen before. A tiny little knob hidden in one groove. It looked like, well, a switch. Nestled in, where it couldn't be flipped accidentally. She used a hairpin to reach in and flip the switch. It moved, just as she'd expected it to. A switch?
It seemed so mundane. This was either a mystical relic or some kind of secret technology. You didn't use a switch on things like that. You held them up to starlight or spoke the special command phrases, or did a dance on the last day of the month while eating a kumquat. The switch didn't seem to have done anything, so Maracy swallowed and burned a pinch of cadmium. The cube began to vibrate in her fingers. The entire coach lurched, rocking as if it had been struck by something very hard. Maracy hit her head on the roof, then was slammed back down onto her seat. The horses screamed, but Milan somehow kept them under control. Within moments, the coach had pulled to a stop. "What the hell was that?" Waxillium said, hauling himself up off the floor where he had ended up in a jumble with Steris. Maracy groaned, sitting up and holding her head. "I did something stupid."
"How stupid?" Waxillium asked.
"I was testing the device," Maracy said, "and used allomancy." Wayne's head appeared at the door a moment later, hanging down from above.
"Was that a speed bubble?"
"Yes," Maracy said.
"That jolt damn near killed the horses," Wayne said.
"I'm sorry, I'm sorry." Waxillium helped Steris sit up. What went wrong?" she asked, befuddled.
"Maracy used a speed bubble while we were moving," Waxillium said. "We hit the threshold and towed her out of it, popping the thing and lurching us from one time frame to the next."
"But she used it on the train," Steris said.
"Speed bubbles move with you if you're on something massive enough," Waxillium said. "Otherwise, the spinning of the planet would pop you out of everyone you made. The train was heavy and fast. The stagecoach is small and just slow enough, so..."
"So I should have known better," Maracy said, blushing. "I haven't done that since I was a kid. But Waxillium, it buzzed."
"What?"
"The cube, it..."
Maracy started, realizing she'd dropped the cube in the confusion. She searched around frantically before finally locating it near his foot. She held it up triumphantly.
"It had a switch."
"A switch?"
She turned it to the side, showing them the little switch.
"You have to slip something small in to move it," she said. "But it works now."
He looked at it, baffled, then showed it to Steris, who squinted.
"What kind of eldritch device," Steris said, "has an on switch?"
"Makes sense, I guess," Waxillium said. "You don't want your eldritch devices turning on accidentally."
"Might end up almost killing your stagecoach drivers," Wayne grumbled.
"It didn't stop your allomancy?"
Waxillium asked Maracy, rubbing his chin. She shook her head. She could still sense her metal reserves.
"It didn't seem to do anything."
"Huh," Waxillium held it up. "Could be dangerous."
"So we're testing it, then?"
Wayne asked, hanging into the window.
"Of course we are," Waxillium said. "But away from the coach."
Wax held the vibrating cube in his hand. It did respond to his metal burning, but didn't seem to do anything else. They'd stopped near a stand of towering walnut trees, and Wayne was filling his pockets while Maracy watched Wax experiment from a safe distance. Milan watered the horses at a stream down the way. Nearby, a field of carrots grew with green sprouts, completely uncultivated. The air smelled fresh, of life untouched. He held up the buzzing cube and let his metals die off. The cube stopped vibrating. He burned them again, and it responded, starting slowly but picking up after about a second or two. But what did it do? Why didn't it blank his allomancy as it had on the train?
Maybe it doesn't work on the person activating it, he thought.
That would make some kind of sense, though he couldn't fathom how it could tell.
"Hey, Wayne," he said.
"Yeah, mate?"
"Catch."
Wax tossed the cube to him. Wayne caught it, then jumped as his belt, which held his metal vials and any coins on his person, ripped free from its breakaway straps and sprang away from him. He turned, watching it flop to the ground a good 20 feet down the hill, and when he approached it, it scooted away. Wax ran toward him, and as he did, the shotgun in his leg holster pressed backward as if being pushed. The effect wore off a few seconds later, and by the time he reached Wayne, the cube had stopped buzzing. Wayne held it up.
"What was that?"
Wax plucked the device from his fingers as Maracy rushed over to join them.
It doesn't steal Allomancy, Wayne. It never did.
But
it takes the metal one is burning, Wax said, and somehow extends it. You saw. It pushed your metal away as if a coin shot were there near you. The cube used Allomancy.
The three of them stood, stunned, looking at the little device.
We need to try it again, Wax said. Wayne, hold this and burn your bend alloy. Maracy, go stand over there. Wayne, once you're ready, throw the cube to her.
They did as directed. Wax stood back. When Wayne ignited his metals, he suddenly became a blur inside his speed bubble. The cube zipped out an eye blink later and soared through the air toward Maracy, deflected somewhat but still moving in the right direction. It engaged just before reaching her, and she became a blur, zipping over to pick up the cube, then zipping back. It took a count of 10 before the cube stopped working, dropping her into ordinary time.
"Did you see that?" Maracy said, awed, holding the cube. "It created a speed bubble for me. It fed off Wayne's Allomancy and replicated it."
"It's what we've been looking for, then?"
Wayne asked, joining them, having dropped his own bubble.
"Not quite," Wax replied, taking the cube and holding it up. "But it's certainly encouraging. It looks like you have to be an Allomancer to use this. It doesn't grant new powers, but it does extend the ones you have. It's like an Allomantic grenade."
Maracy nodded eagerly.
"Which means that the man on the train, the one who used this on us, is a leecher. He can remove Allomancy in others, and he gave that power to the cube which he threw at you."
"It engages a second or so after you throw it," Wax said with a nod. "Useful."
"And it's proof that Suit has technology he's been hiding," Maracy said.
"We knew that from the communication device," Wax said. "But yes, this is even more curious. I'm half tempted to think all this talk of the Bands of Mourning came from rumors of this technology the set has been developing."
"And the symbols?"
"No idea," Wax said. "Some kind of cipher they developed?"
He tapped the cube, then handed the thing to Maracy.
"Why me?"
she asked.
"It's yours. You found it. You figured out how to turn it on. Besides, I have a feeling it's going to be the most effective in your hands."
She held it a moment, then her eyes widened. Being a pulser wasn't very useful when you were catching yourself in a bubble where you moved slowly compared to everyone else. However, if you could trap someone else in that bubble... Wayne whistled softly.
"I'll try not to lose it," Maracy said, tucking the device away. "We'll need to study it later. Find out how it works."
"I wonder," Wax thought, remembering something else.
He played his hunch, reaching into his pocket and fishing out the golden bracelet that Kalasina had been wearing. He tossed it to Wayne.
"What's this?"
Wayne asked, holding it up toward the sky.
"Pretty hoop of gold, that is. Who'd you trade this off of? I could use this, mate. It would make a nice metal mine."
"I think it's already one," Wax said, deflating. It had been a silly idea in the first place.
Wayne gasped.
"What?"
Maracy said.
"It's a metal mine," Wayne said. "Damn me, but it is. And I can sense it. Wax, you got your knife?"
Wax nodded, yanking his knife from his gun belt, and when Wayne proffered his hand, he sliced a small cut along the back. It resealed immediately.
"Mate," Wayne whispered. "It's someone else's metal mind, but I can use it."
"Like Vandel said," Wax said, taking the bracelet from Wayne's fingers. "A metal mind with no identity. Rusts. I have to flare my metal to even get the faintest line pointing to it. This thing must be stuffed full of power."
More than any metal mind he'd ever sensed, in fact. He could usually push on those without too much trouble. He'd barely been able to shift this one.
"Why didn't I notice what it was immediately?" Wayne said. "I had to be told. And, oh, rosts! This is proof of the Bands of Mourning, ain't it?"
"No," Wax said. "I can't sense a reserve in the bracelet. I can't use it, as I'm not a blood maker. It's not a metal mind anybody can use, just one that anyone with the right powers already can use."
"That's still remarkable," Maracy said.
"And disturbing," Wax said,
staring at that innocent-looking loop. The only way to have created this would involve using a ferrochemist with two powers. So either the set had access to full-blooded ferrochemists, or his fears were coming true. They'd figured out how to use hemallergy.
Or it's a relic, he thought. There's that possibility. Perhaps this and the box were artifacts of another time.
He tossed the bracelet back to Wayne. How much is in it?
A heap, Wayne said. But it's not endless. The reservoir got smaller when I healed that cut.
Hang on to it, then, Wax said, turning as he heard his name. Milan was at the edge of the glade, waving. Wax left Wayne and Maracy, striding over to the tall, slender Condor woman, still worried about what these discoveries meant. What did the bracelet indicate? Was there more to be discovered? Metal mines that granted anyone who touched them incredible powers? For the first time, he really started to wonder. What if the bands were real? What would happen to society if metal-born powers were simply something you could purchase? He trudged up to Milan.
I think you'll want to see this, she said, waving for him to follow her up the side of a steep hill covered in foliage.
At the top, they had a view of the land to the northeast. Some was cultivated in rows and rings, but much was like what they'd just left. Wilderness, blooming with random patches of fruits or vegetables. A cool breeze blew across him, barely enough to temper the heat of the sunlight above. Seeing it all, feeling that perfect breeze, made Wax realize what annoyed him so much about the problems between Ellendale and the outer cities. Did these people comprehend what life was like out in the roughs, where planting was fraught with uncertainty and the danger of starvation was real?
They think people are foolish for living in the roughs, Wax thought, taking the old-fashioned spyglass that Milan handed him. They don't understand what it's like to get trapped out there for generations, too poor or too stubborn to return to the basin.
Freedom in the roughs came at a cost. Either way, the basin was literally paradise, crafted for men by a god who wanted to compensate the world for a millennium of ashes and ruin. It seemed that even in paradise, men would find reasons to squabble and fight. Wax raised the spyglass.
What am I looking for? Check the road about a mile up, Milan said, by that creek with the bridge over it.
He spotted a couple of men lounging in a field with axes. From the looks of it, they'd been cutting at the trunk of a dead tree. Another fallen tree crossed the roadway.
What do you see?
Milan asked.
A roadblock that doesn't want to look like one, Wax said. That tree across the road is arranged to seem as if it just fell there, but the furrows on the ground indicate it was dragged there intentionally and has been moved a time or two since being placed.
Good eye,
Milan said.
You can't have it, he said, turning the spyglass and looking toward the farmsteads in the area. Soldiers stationed in that farmhouse over there, I'd guess, and none of the other homes have smoke rising from them. Probably abandoned. You're unlikely to find a farmstead this time of day without dinner in the oven.
They're waiting for us?
No, this is too extensive for that, Wax said. This is a perimeter. They're trying not to have it look like one to prevent word from spreading. But they've cordoned off this entire area. What the hell is happening in there?
Milan shook her head, looking baffled.
Well, we can't take the coach any farther, Wax said, handing back the spyglass. How are you at bareback?
Well, I haven't thrown any riders off recently, but I don't get occasion to be a horse very often, so I can't say how I'll feel today.
Wax blinked.
Oh, you meant riding, Milan said. Yeah, I'm fine. I doubt I'm the one you'll have to worry about.
She nodded back toward Steris, walking into the grove, trailed by Wayne, who had filled his hat with walnuts.
Right, Wax said.
Hopefully, some of their horses would prove docile. Twilight settled upon the land fitfully, like a tired eye struggling to stay open. It was the variety of the land down here in the south, Wax figured. One moment you could be riding through a wooded hollow, all in shadow, and the next you'd crest a hill into an open field and find that the sun hadn't quite dropped below the horizon yet. Still, darkness did eventually arrive, but with it came no mists. Wax realized he'd been longing to feel them envelop him again. Milan led the sortie, keeping to forested areas when possible. She or Wayne would scout ahead, listening for patrols, but the set was attempting to hold such a large area that they obviously couldn't watch the whole wilderness. Maracy, of course, was an accomplished rider, and seemed pleased to have a reason to change into her new constable's trousers and jacket. Steris surprised him. She did just fine, even riding in a skirt. She'd packed one full enough that she could tuck it beneath her and ride bareback without exposing too much. She took to it without complaint, as she'd done with practically everything else on this trip. The few farmsteads or hunters' camps they passed on their ride were empty. Wax felt a mounting disquiet. Yes, this was a small, largely unpopulated region in the basin's backwaters, but it was still profoundly disturbing that the set could dominate it so fully. Once they reached the final patch of trees near the village, Milan scouted ahead, then came back and waved for him to follow. He crawled up with her to peer at the village from the tree line. Bright, electric floodlights lit the perimeter around an enormous structure in what obviously had once been the center of the village of Dulsing. Wooden, windowless, huge, it was still under construction, judging by the scaffolding at the sides and the unfinished roof at the top. The town's buildings had mostly been torn down, leaving only a few at the perimeter untouched. The roofless top of the building glowed with a warm light. Where were they getting so much electricity? Milan handed him the spyglass, and he raised it, inspecting the perimeter. Those were definitely soldiers, wearing red uniforms with some mark on the breast that wasn't distinguishable at this distance. They carried rifles at their shoulders, and the floodlights created a bright ring around the place. Focused outward, not toward the building, which left plenty of shadowed areas inside that ring. So they'd have cover once they got past the perimeter.
"What do you think?" he asked. "Is that some kind of bunker?" "Doesn't look like any fort I've seen," Milan whispered. "With those flimsy walls, looks more like a big warehouse."
"A warehouse as large as a small town." Wax shook his head in bafflement, then spotted something near the far side of the village. "A waterfall?" It was outside the lights, but he thought he could see mist rising from where it plunged down, and a small stream did run through the village.
"High ground that direction," he said.
"Yeah,"
she said.
"The maps mention the waterfall over there. Small but pretty, supposedly."
"Must have hooked up a turbine to it," he said. "That's where the power is coming from. Let's get back to the others."
They crawled through the underbrush again to where Wayne, Maracy, and Steris waited in the dim woods.
"They're here all right," Wax whispered. "We have to find a way to get in. Tons of soldiers. Well-guarded perimeter."
"Fly in,"
Steris suggested.
"Not gonna work," Wayne said. "They had a seeker back at the party. You think they won't have one here? The moment one of us burns a medal, we'll draw 100 of Suit's goons to welcome us with a handshake and a friendly bit of murdering."
"What then?"
Maracy asked.
"I need to see," Wayne said.
"There's a better vantage point on the other side, we think," Wax said.
He pointed, and Milan led the way in the darkness, walking her horse between the towering hardwoods. Wax fell in with Steris at the tail of the group and lagged a little to be able to speak with her privately.
"Steris," he whispered, "I've been considering how to proceed once we decide how to infiltrate. I've thought about bringing you in with us, and I just don't see that it's feasible. I think it would be best if you stayed and watched the horses."
"Very well."
"No, really. Those are armed soldiers. I can't even fathom how I'd feel if I brought you in there and something happened. You need to stay out here."
"Very well."
"It isn't subject to..." Wax hesitated. "Wait. You're all right with this?"
"Why wouldn't I be?" she asked. "I barely have any sense of where to point a gun, and have hardly any capacity for sneaking. That's really quite a scandalous talent, if you think about it, Lord Waxillium. While I do believe that people tend to be safest when near you, riding into an enemy compound is stretching the issue. I'll stay here."
Wax grinned in the darkness.
"Steris, you're a gem."
"What, because I have a moderately healthy sense of self-preservation?"
"Let's just say that out in the roughs,
I was accustomed to people always wanting to try things beyond their capacity, and they always seemed determined to do it right when it was the most dangerous.
"Well, I shall endeavor to stay out of sight," Steris said, "and not get captured."
"I doubt you need to worry about that all the way out here."
"Oh, I agree," she said. "But that is the sort of statistical anomaly that plagues my life, so I'll plan for it nonetheless."
With some difficulty, they navigated to the eastern edge of the town, where they left Steris and the horses. Wax dug some supplies off the pack animal. Metal vials, extra bullets, plenty of guns, including the aluminum one he'd stolen back at Kalasina's place. And the last of Renette's ball-and-string devices, which he tucked into the pouch on his gun belt. After climbing up some switchbacks, they were able to settle onto a darkened ridge above the falls, which were nowhere near as impressive as he'd imagined, and study the town. Well, the remnants of it.
"I wish we could see into that building,"
Marcy said, handing back the spyglass. Wax grunted in agreement. They were almost high enough to see what was going on inside. Certainly, those flickering lights bespoke considerable activity. People moving down below, passing before the lights in the large chamber. But what were they doing? And why were they still at it well into the night?
"Gonna be hard to sneak in there," Wayne said.
"You could kill one of the guards for me,"
Milan said, settling onto a rock.
"I'd eat him, take his shape, and slip us in that way."
Wax blinked, then glanced at Marcy, who seemed sick.
"Really?"
Milan said.
"You all need to stop staring at me like that when I offer pragmatic suggestions."
"It's not pragmatic," Marcy said. "It's cannibalism."
"Technically, it's not, as we're different species. Honestly, if you look at our physiology, I share less in common with humans than you do with a cow. And nobody gasps when you eat one of those. You didn't have trouble with it back in the mansion with Innate's bodyguard."
"She was already dead," Wax said. "Thank you for the suggestion, Milan, but getting you a guard's body is out of the question."
"We don't like killing folks," Wayne said. "At least, unless they start shooting at us. They're just chaps what are doing their job."
He looked to Marcy as if for support.
"Don't look at me," Marcy said. "I'm reeling from watching you trying to take the moral high ground."
"Focus, Wayne," Wax said. "How are we going to get in? Shall we try a fat belt?"
"Nah," Wayne said. "Too loud. I think we should do spoiled tomato."
"Dangerous," Wax said, shaking his head. "I'd have to do the placement just right, between the perimeter and the shadowed part near the walls."
"You can do it. You make shots like that all the time. Plus we got this shiny new metal mine full of health waiting to be slurped up."
"A mistake could ruin the whole infiltration, healing power or no," Wax said. "I think we should do duck under clouds instead."
"You kidding?" Wayne said. "Didn't you get shot last time we tried that?"
"Kinda," Wax admitted.
Milan stared at them, baffled.
"Duck under clouds?"
"They get like this," Marcy said, patting her on the shoulder. "Best not to listen too closely."
"Tube run," Wayne said.
"No glue."
"Banefielder?"
"Too dark."
"Black watch double stomp."
Wax hesitated.
"The hell is that?"
"Just made it up,"
Wayne said, grinning.
"It's a nifty code name, though, eh?"
"Not bad," Wax admitted. "And what type of plan is it?"
"Same as spoiled tomato," Wayne said.
"I said it was too dangerous."
"Nothing else will work," Wayne said, standing. "Look, are we going to sit here arguing, or are we going to do this?"
Wax debated for a moment, eyeing the grounds, thinking. Could he get the placement right? But then, did he have a better plan? That perimeter was very well guarded, but it was a dark night. If his life in the roughs had taught him one thing, it was to trust his instincts. Unfortunately, at that moment, they agreed with Wayne. So, before he could talk himself out of it, he pulled his shotgun from its holster and tossed it to Wayne. The shorter man caught it with distaste. Guns and Wayne didn't agree. His arms immediately started shaking.
"Try to hold on tight," Wax said. "Make an opening on the north side if you can."
He increased his weight, flared his metal, and pushed on the gun, using it as an anchor to hurl Wayne out off the rocky outcropping and over the camp.
The man soared from the push before dropping through the darkness some 50 feet toward the ground below. Marcy gasped.
"Spoiled tomato?" she asked.
"Yeah," Wax said. "Apparently it makes a mess sometimes when he lands."
"To rust with that wax," Wayne thought as he plummeted toward the ground, his hat blowing off. "Tossing a gun to a fellow without even warning him? Why, that's just..."
He hit. Now, there was a trick to falling to your death. Bodies hitting the ground were loud, louder than anyone ever expected. He mitigated this by hitting feet first. His legs both snapped immediately, then twisted onto his side, breaking his shoulder, but dampening some of the sound by rolling with the impact. He tapped his fancy new metal mind right before his head smacked the ground, dazing him. He ended up in a crumpled, broken heap beside a pile of rocks. Of course Wax would have sent him into a pile of rocks. As his vision cleared, he tried to glance at his legs, but he couldn't move. Couldn't feel anything, actually, which was quite pleasant. It was always nice when you snapped the spine. Helped with the pain. Not that pain went completely away, mind you. But he and Payne were old friends, what shared a handshake and a beer now and then. Didn't much like one another, but they had a working relationship. Sensation, and agony, flooded back into him as his metal mind healed his spine, focusing on the worst wounds first. He drew in a deep breath. A snapped spine could suffocate a man. People didn't know that. Or, well, the ones who did know had suffocated already. As soon as he could move, even while his legs were healing, he twisted and used his good arm to position one of the large rocks in the pile. Looked like these stones were here intended for shoring up the sides of the stream, perhaps to make a pathway across. Wayne put them to good use, reaching up with his other hand as his shoulder healed. Wax had placed him well, right in the dark area between the perimeter watch posts and the building. But that didn't mean he was safe. Wayne stumbled to his feet, dragging Wax's gun, his leg twisting about and bones re-knitting. Damn fine metal mind that gold bracelet was. An extensive healing like this would have cost him months of saving up, but this metal mind was still mostly full. He stumbled away as quietly as he could, leaving a large rock balanced on the others as he sought a place deeper in the shadows, then hid the gun near the building so his damn hand would stop shaking. He got away none too soon. A pair of soldiers were approaching from the perimeter.
"It was over here," one said to the other.
As they drew closer, one of the spotlights turned around and shone on the area, giving them light and quite nearly exposing Wayne. He froze in the shadows near a pile of work equipment, sweating as his toes popped softly, the bones grinding against one another as they knit back into their proper places. The guards didn't hear. They stepped up to where he'd fallen, no tomato splat of blood this time, fortunately, and looked around. One nudged the stone accidentally, and it fell off the peak where Wayne had placed it, rolling down the side of the small pile and clattering against the other rocks. The men looked at it, then nodded, doing a quick sweep before heading back to their post and returning the light to its scan of the nearby area. The noise they'd heard had merely been some rocks shifting. Nothing significant. Wayne stood up straight in the darkness and stopped tapping the bracelet metal mind. He felt good, renewed, like he always did after a big healing. Felt like he could do something impossible, run up a mountain, or eat the entire boar and chips plate at Findlay's all on his own. He crept off through the shadows about important business. Fortunately, he found his hat almost immediately, near another rock pile. That done, he moved on to less important matters, like making an opportunity to help the others sneak in. Wax had said north side. Let's see. He kept close to the building, and even resisted the urge to go sneaking in on his own to find out what in ruin's name was in there. Time to think like a guard. It was hard, as he didn't have a guard's hat. He settled into the shadows and listened as a pair of them passed on patrol, digesting their accents, like a nice snack of pretzel sticks with mustard. After about 15 minutes of watching, he picked out a likely candidate and kept pace as the man did his rounds, though Wayne stayed in the shadow. The lanky fellow had a face like a rabbit, but was tall enough he could probably have picked all the walnuts he wanted without needing a stepladder. Here I am, Wayne thought, in the middle of nowhere, guarding a big old barn. This isn't what I signed up for. I haven't seen my daughter in 8 months. 8 months! She's probably talking by now. Rusts. This life.
The man turned to go back the other way on his rounds, and someone barked out at him from one of the stations with the floodlights, saying something. Wayne couldn't hear. The tone was unmistakable.
And my superiors, Wayne thought, turning and slinking along in the shadows, still keeping pace with the man. Oh, how they lean on me. Every little thing gets me a-talking to. Shouting. That's all this life is. Being yelled at day in and day out.
Wayne smiled, then scuttled ahead of the man, looking for something he'd stepped over earlier. A set of black cords, each as thick as his finger, plugged into a big cigar box near the building. As the guard came strolling past, not paying attention, Wayne carefully lifted the cords. The guard's foot caught on them. In that moment, Wayne yanked them from the hub. The floodlights nearest to him went out. Men immediately started shouting. The guard panicked in the darkness.
"I'm sorry," he shouted. "I didn't mean to. I wasn't washing my feet."
Wayne slipped away and found a nice quiet nook between two stacks of sandbags as the guards shouted and argued, and the poor man was chewed out. Some people came in to fix the cords, though Wayne had tossed them to the side, so it took some time searching in the dark to find the ends and get them connected. The lights came back on. Wayne was taking a long swig from his leather canteen as Wax, Maracy, and Milan joined him in the shadows.
"Nice," Wax whispered. "It wasn't, actually," Wayne whispered. "It was pretty mean. That poor guard ain't done nothing wrong, and everybody keeps yelling at him."
Wax took the lead at that point, prowling along the side of the big barn-like building. The roof wasn't the only thing still unfinished. The entrances were open, not fitted with proper doors. They stopped beside one, and Wayne pointed, whispering to Wax where his shotgun was. Wax fetched it, then snuck through the doorway. They followed, Wayne last of all. The cavernous interior was lit by a few electric lanterns here and there, and they passed a long light lattice that was obviously going to be installed in the ceiling once the roof was done. It was brighter than outside in here, but not by much, and there were stacks of boxes and supplies arranged in rows which let them sneak through and stay hidden. Once they got to the front of the rows of boxes, Wax hesitated, and the two women peered around him. Nobody gave Wayne a good view, which was how it always went. First he got yelled at on the job, then this. He wiggled between them, getting a good elbow into Maracy's midriff, which earned him a glare, as if she didn't know that proper crowd-wiggling protocol involved getting friendly with one another's extremities. He managed to peek between Wax and Milan, finally getting a glimpse at what had stopped them. It was a boat. Of course, the common word, boat, didn't do the thing justice. Wayne stared at the massive construction, searching for a better description. One that would capture the majesty, the incredible scale of the thing he was seeing.
"That's a damn big boat," he finally whispered.
"Much better." Why would they be building a ship here, miles and miles from the ocean? The thing couldn't be easy to move. It filled almost the entire building, with a curved bottom and a prow. Unfinished on one side, that was easily 3 stories high. The thing had 2 long, arm-like extensions at the sides. Pontoons? They were big, and one wasn't finished yet, ending in a jagged line of construction.
Jagged?
Wayne frowned. That didn't look like the way you built something. In fact, now that he studied it, that prow looked more crumpled than unfinished.
"Someone broke it," Wayne said, pointing. "They were trying to move it and cracked off one pontoon."
"It has to be a warship," Maracy said. "They are preparing for a war."
"I think Wayne is right," Wax said. "Look at the gouges in the dirt, the damage to the hull. They were transporting this thing through here, and it rolled free and cracked. So the set constructed this building to cut it off from view of anyone outside while they repair it."
"Engineers," Wayne said,
pointing at some people who were obviously smart types, walking along the outside of the ship and pointing, carrying clipboards and wearing dark brown suits and skirts, the type teachers at schools would wear, thinking they were the height of fashion.
"It's not like any ship I've seen," Marcy said, shouldering her purse and clutching her rifle.
"You brought your purse," Wayne said, "on a Darren infiltration?"
"Why not?" she said. "Purses are handy. Anyway, if the set has technology like that speaking telegraph, what will they put on a ship like this? And why did they build it away from the sea in the first place?"
"Suit will have answers," Wax said, eyes narrowing. "Marcy, I assume you're still after the spike?"
"Yes," she said, determined.
"I'm going to find my uncle. Who do you want, Wayne or Milan?"
"Milan, this time," Marcy said.
Wax nodded. "Stay hidden. But if Wayne and I get spotted, try to help. We'll do the same for you. If you find that spike, return to this point and lie low. If all goes well, we'll slip back out together."
"And if all doesn't go well?"
"Which it won't," Wayne added.
"Meet back where we left Steris and the horses," Wax said, sliding a gun from the holster at his side.
Milan did the same, only her holster was her leg. Like, the skin split, and she reached in through a slit in her trousers and slipped the gun out. A sleek, long-barreled thing. Wayne whistled softly. She grinned, then gave him a kiss.
"Try not to get shot too many times."
"You neither," he said. They split up.